Chapter 1. Immortals. Time Without End. I'm in a cold cave, which is rather ironic because I'm in hell. Don't pity me. After the moon drips with blood, I will come for you. Until then, I'm here at my summer residence, prepping for our meeting. Armageddon. The day I scrub Earth clean of its invaders. You. My most treasured possession sits beside me while humans squint, then peek through the optics of a telescope only to ask, is there an intelligent life form in outer space? I laugh. Only a nitwit and self-centered creature would look into a telescope and ask such a stupid question. If a creature requires a telescope to see me, they're working at a disadvantage. I see you. Here's looking at you, kid. No optics, no lens, no convex shiny mirrors, no telescope. And now it's my turn to ask, does any intelligent life exist on Earth? I already know the answer. No, not yet, but very soon. I look down past Earth's atmosphere. The moon is full, bright, white. One day it will darken to blood red at the right time. Then we will come back, and there will only be enough room for one species. Mine. Welcome home, Nomad, I say to myself, eager for the day when Aglaopi whispers these three words into my ear as we stand side by side on the sugary white beaches of Key West, Florida, or the snow-packed ridges of Mount Everest. I love the cold. It suits me. You're in good practice, Aglaopi smiles at me. I'm ready. No, we're ready to return home, Agla. I gaze into the distance. Cloaked in secrecy, my winter home approaches Earth. Ah, when a plan comes together. We call our Trojan horse Wormwood. Larger than the sun, the invisible planet hides in the shadows of Earth's universe, deep into a wormhole that no human has dared to explore. Besides, the inky black entrance into that wormhole appears as a tiny speck through Earth's most powerful telescopes. My warriors train day and night in preparation for our day of reckoning. The day we invade Earth and take it back, making the planet great once again. When they see Wormwood, it will be too late, Agla.
And that's why you're his general, Nomad. Cunning, ruthless, decisive.
Her left eye scarred shut, Aglaopi gazes into my left eye.
Could a human fight your warriors and win?
Of course.
But you promised me. She pulls away from my embrace. You promised that all would be well, that I would be safe.
They could win if they knew how to fight us, but they don't know how to fight us, and their bullets, nuclear warheads, aircraft carriers, and submarines will be useless in this fight. They will kill themselves, but not us. Never fear. Humans couldn't figure out how to give life if they tried. How long have they played around in the most prestigious laboratories, yet not cured cancer?
This weapon... Aglaopi reaches for my hand. What is it?
I hold the secret closer to my bosom than I have held you.
Nomad, tell me, she whines.
No, it's for your protection, my love. Do not ask me again.
The reconnaissance team left an hour ago. Why?
She's a sneaky interrogator. I smile. Use her skills to defeat the humans. Small, spindly, weak man and woman, I spit. Acid eats away at the stone floor of our cave. Any threat to our victory will be destroyed. You have suffered because of them. Now they will suffer because of you, Agla.
My defender, she blushes.
Nomad, purge the humans immediately. Don't wait. I fear in time they will gain strength. Tell our leader, okay?
No. Let them do their part. Slaughtering their neighbor, man, woman, and child, for every reason under the sun. They love death. Then, death they shall have. Fools they are, eliminating their own warriors.
But you'll save the animals? The snake, the shark, the grizzly?
Yes, my love. We will protect Earth's animals. They are the civilized species on Earth.
Have this man and woman seen us? Do they know we are coming?
Coming? No. Exist? They call us aliens. Little green men with big black eyes. I've seen the artistic renderings. I laugh again. aliens, little green men. Aglaopi laughs too, covering her twisted lips. She used to be beautiful. They call us extraterrestrials, as though we're side actors in their play. Silly they are. They do not deserve life, and I intend to put Earth out of its misery. I squeeze Aglaopi's hand. Then death you shall gift. But remember, protect our people. Promise me, Nomad. Aglaopi. I place my hand across my heart and stand at attention. As general of our powerful army, I promise this to you. On that day of reckoning, Earth's Armageddon, not one man or woman will spill the innocent blood of our warriors, but I will flood Earth's rivers, lakes, and oceans with their blood, human blood. The vultures, sea monsters, and hyenas will feast for days, and you and I, we will celebrate and then make you well again. We will celebrate. Earth will be cleansed, livable once more. Purge the humans for our home soon, Nomad. I want to be well. Agla, I am a powerful creature, but do I decide when Earth moves in between the sun and the moon? A tear slips from her right eye and she whispers, No, and that's what I'm afraid of. He does. Her emphasis fell on he. Tell me your fears, my love. I will crush them. I ball my hands into fists. My claws dig into my skin. Green slime oozes from my body. I would bleed dry for Aglaopi. I'm afraid. You've discounted the one who flung the moon, the stars, and the sun into space. No, they have discounted the one. Even still, her voice drops. He may fight for them, man and woman. If he fights for them, they will win this war. Why would he? They care nothing for him. They distort everything he creates. Thump, scrape, thump, scrape. The sound of metal slapping and then dragging along a granite floor pounds in my ears. The master is approaching. I crouch low. Hide, Aglaopi. She slinks around the corner of the small cave, down the usual passage of a set of narrow stone steps before disappearing into a smoky haze. My body aches for her, but she's gone. Only the stench of sulfur remains, my constant reminder of my failure to Aglaopi. Nomad, Nomad, where are you? My master's voice haunts my ears, chatters my teeth. Here, my lord. I shift my weight, kneel, then lie prostrate. My master's iridescent, snake-like form slithers at lightning speed through the underworld, vibrating the stagnant, thick air. Black smoke belches from a cauldron of burning sulfur, while screams of lost souls reverberate in the background. Eerie, dissonant tones erupt from a contraption that resembles a splintered pipe organ as my master charges toward me. Bow before me. I propel my reptilian body atop the black granite floor, careful to remain prostrate before my master. I rotate my scaly neck and peek at Lucifer. When he blinks, black-green scales flicker over his neon-green eyes. His razor-toothed maw widens. Yellowed, jagged teeth reveal his pleasure. Oh, to be worshipped! Stand. I rise like a king cobra. Go to the viewing room. Lucifer struts past me. I jump up and run on iridescent green-black webbed feet, overlaid with finger-like claws. A plan, my lord? No. War. Lucifer marches deeper into the cavern. Our forces are fatigued. That's your fault, not mine. Something burns in his wake. Elohim's planning his final act. The end. I whisper, scampering behind my master. A towering wall of luminescent green gel wobbles before us, the portal to the viewing room where images of the future are revealed. The viewing room's images haven't been reliable in the past, I say. We've identified Elohim's agents before, my master says. I grimace as I stare at the gelatin wall. Sensing my fear, it shoots biting ice shards into my leathery scales. They stab my flesh like 1,000 fragments of glass. I clench my teeth, enduring the pain. Are we to be banished? Questions won't stop Elohim, only actions. Can we stop him? Stop his agents. That's always been the way. Lucifer grins wide, revealing pearlescent white fangs. Sometimes my master appears dashing, but other times... Lucifer slips his claws through the wall of green gel. Reluctantly, I follow. Haunting voices from the future mix with screeches belonging to readers who channel the future. A fuzzy image plays on a stony wall in the dark room. A seance. Out! The petrol station worker grabs 12-year-old Joseph by his ripped t-shirt and throws him across the room. His body slams into a brick wall. Dazed, the boy scrambles to get on his feet and run, but the man jumps on him again and starts kicking him repeatedly in the gut. Please, please, he cries between laboured breaths. I'll leave. Just let me get up. Don't come back. The man stops kicking. Next time, I'll douse you with petrol and set you on fire.
Yes, sir. I promise.
There's no breath left for words, so Joseph crawls from the warm room into a cold Manchester evening. The icy wind barrels past his threadbare clothes and jolts a shiver up his body. He grips the window ledge, pulls himself to his feet, and stumbles along until he finds his new home behind a dumpster. If the Irish Scots boy could remember how Mama Kelly had prayed, he would beg to fall asleep and never wake up. Yahweh is the name she'd prayed to. Joseph may not know the name, but he hopes her God doesn't hate him as much as most adults do.
Elohim's agent is a 12-year-old homeless boy. I burst into laughter. He won't survive until morning.
You fool. He's not just any 12-year-old. That's Cillian Joseph Finn. I stare at the ground. David killed Goliath. A shepherd boy killed a giant with a stone and a sling. That was an anomaly. You judge nothing. Lucifer strolls to my side. Don't let another anomaly occur.
Yes, my lord. Should I rouse the force?
Not yet. The readers say there's another agent. I gaze back at the stony wall. Echoes of screams deliver their message.
A 12-year-old girl named Rose stands at the edge of the creek, watching a water macasin slither through the water. She slides off her shoes and socks, then dips her right toe into the cold water. Would the snake's bite hurt? Would death come quickly? The kids at school hate her. They say she's too smart or too dumb. Then what is she?
Alone.
She steps into the water and approaches the snake. It stops, turns, and waits. What about Daddy? He's sick. Mom? She'd miss her. Her reflexes ignore the warning growing in her mind. She strides toward her choice of death. Stop! Her teacher calls from the field behind her, but the determined child sloshes through the stream closer to the snake. Her foot slides over a smooth rock hidden in the creek bed. Losing her balance, she crashes into the pond. The snake floats inches from her head and rises above the water's surface, ready to strike. Someone splashes into the water beside Rose's shoulder. Hands grip her arms, pulling her from the creek.
What on earth are you doing?
Rose's shoulders start shaking. I'm sorry, Ms. Jenkins. I'm so sad.
What are you saying?
The little girl wags her head, then falls into her teacher's embrace.
You listen to me and listen real good. Before you were born, Yahweh tucked away great plans for you. Your kindred friend will come. Just you wait and see.
Yes, ma'am. Rose smiles.
I roll my torso erect and laugh.
She's a girl, and a stupid one at that. What 12-year-old entertains death and wins?
Her mother did.
I forgot, my lord.
I bow low.
See that death wins this time.
Kill her?
Lucifer smiles.
You wanted a promotion, more time on earth. Earn it.
You're generous, master.
Don't forget it.